Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Like sands through the Blackwater, so are the days of our Milton. And now, another episode of City Council Melodrama Theater.
What is the policy or legal responsibility of the city in the event that a citizen finds it necessary to file a civil lawsuit against any one of you for public records? Is there a policy or a legal requirement, responsibility of the city?
So, hey, for not any reason in particular, I'm just wondering, theoretically, if a citizen was frustrated about the inability to get public records from, let's say, an elected official who had been sued by the city itself, but then when the politics changed in the city council decided to drop that lawsuit, abandoning all possibility of recouping the money that they had spent on that lawsuit and abandoning the claim on the public records of this particular hypothetical, theoretical elected Mayor Heather Lindsay. Then if all of that happened and say some citizen, I don't know, like Howard Steele, I mean, it happens to be my name, but, you know, happened to file a lawsuit, what would happen? What's the policy on that?
As I understand it, this part of the meeting is for you to provide your.
I'm asking. I know, but this is my 3 minutes, and I'm asking. If nobody wants to answer my question, that's fine. But I would think that there would be a policy in the event that a citizen doesn't receive their public records, well, and they have to file a civil lawsuit. What is your direction at that point as a council? Do you direct the city attorney to defend that member, or do you take a neutral position? What is the policy?
So the backdrop here is there's been a lot of contention between Howard Steele and the council and Heather Lindsay. He had tried to get the lawsuit continued and I think had maybe missed a filing deadline or something, so it kind of got dropped. He could still file the suit and look for the public records as an individual, right? If he thinks there's public records that are not being produced, he can file the suit. All the documents and the review of those public records is theoretically available, I guess. I don't know. I think they've been probably returned to her, so I don't know if the judge would have to go through and do it all again, what was done before. But in any case, you know, remember also because of some of his stern words to the council at one of the previous meetings, you had a couple of city council members recommend throwing him off of the two boards that he sits on because, A, he cost them money by filing this lawsuit and or by kind of perpetuating this lawsuit, and B, he's just being a mean guy, you know, is really just, you know, being impolite to them and challenging their authority, and how dare he. And so they talked about kicking him off the board. So that's kind of the backdrop. So he's being very nice in this meeting, and he's basically saying, look, is there a policy? Will the attorney for the city be spending his time and money to defend you? Will you be defending yourself? Before I consider filing a lawsuit, I'd like to know. And as a citizen taxpayer, I don't, you know, maybe what he's thinking is I don't want to make the city pay for the lawsuit. But if you're going to have to pay for it, then maybe I go ahead.
Maybe the city attorney might have a, you know, an answer to the legal responsibility. But
thank you for your question. Yeah. And the best I can tell you, I don't know that any of us here has any awareness of the specific concern you're raising. But
it's a major concern. What are you going to use citizens' funds to defend against the citizen action to receive public records? That's my question. Are you going to remain neutral, or are you going to use taxpayer money against taxpayers?
Again, remember that, you know, the public records are supposed to be just provided. But also, there are times when, you know, a citizen is suing a member of a committee or a council and they're defending themselves, and you would use taxpayer money to defend them against a citizen. It's not that I'm not saying that they should in this case. I'm just saying that the phraseology of use taxpayer money to defend somebody against a taxpayer, it's a poignant way of saying it. But if the council member or the committee member is in the right, you don't just make them spend legal fees because somebody files an inappropriate, unjustified lawsuit against them. That wouldn't be appropriate. So anyway, they go on. Actually, let's take a quick pause in the drama. You know, this commercial break is brought... And soon we'll be back to our drama. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Well, traffic report is brought to you by Anderson Subaru. We've got one accident that just popped up on Sienemann Road and Avalon Boulevard. Let's see here. Drive with caution in that area. Let's see here. I'm not seeing any delays as of yet. But again, that crash just happened, and it's not even the first responders are on their way to that. But other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives. Back to Melodrama Theater.
Back to Milton City Council Melodrama Theater. Okay, so Howard Steele is basically asking for clear, because they're talking about the public records policy is on the agenda for the night, having to do with how much money are you going to charge people, what's reasonable fees. Remember some of the public records requests that have been asked for from Alex Andrade. He had said it would cost, you know, a lot of money to produce them because of his hourly rate. They were incensed about that, and, you know, there's this long conversation about, well, who produces the public records and how much time does it take them and what other things aren't they doing because they're working on public records and all of this stuff, okay? And even the suggestion that you don't necessarily have to print them out. You could just invite somebody to come look at them. They can come look at them anytime. Anyway, so this was a topic of conversation that was coming. He was asking a different question, which is, well, which way is this going to break? You know, if I decide to file, he's not saying this, but if I file a lawsuit against Mayor Heather Lindsay to produce the record she still has not produced regarding the Scott Collins affair, then is the city going to pay for the defense of her, or is she going to pay for the defense of her?
Sir,
I would encourage you as the council.
Use the council. Okay. Use the council. Yes, you as a body. Are you going to direct legal counsel to defend that member or to remain neutral or...
I don't know that the council can answer your question.
I'm sure they can't. I wouldn't think they can at this point if there's no policy if there's no legal responsibility.
Would you allow me to finish?
Yes, ma'am.
I would suggest that you please speak with the city clerk who's responsible for providing the records, speak with the city manager to make sure you understand what the situation is and what can be done. And then I would assume that they would consult with the city attorney who would then update the council to determine what the council's will is for staff in that situation, once the specifics are understood.
Right, what's the will of the staff? What's the will of the council? I guess that's the policy.
And he's wanting to know, so presumably because he's trying to decide whether to pursue this or not, and...
I think your question also raises a good point because the public records policy is on the agenda for tonight, so perhaps your comments will give you food for thought.
I would hope so. My intention was to spur some kind of conversation about what the policy of the city is.
Understood.
In that event. All right, thank you.
Thank you. So was there anything else you wanted them to discuss when that item comes up? Or is that the question that you want them to discuss?
That's basically what the policy of the city.
Thank you for letting me know so I could better understand where you're coming from. Appreciate your remarks, and that will be addressed at the proper time in the meeting.
So that was in the public comment section, and there was, I'm trying to remember which, there was a bit of a time delay. There were some interns who were in the audience, and she had gone through the history of this a little bit, and we'll play this for you for just a second, but there's going to be a part two coming up at 7:10, so don't worry. There's always a part two, and the part two is more entertaining, but she's explaining the history a little bit about how we got here.
Probably everyone here, maybe not the interns because y'all are new, but probably everyone here knows about the history that Mr. Steele had had attempted to ensure that the lawsuit that was filed against me last year regarding public records would continue. And that motion was denied. I believe I'm stating that correctly. It was a motion, I believe, or a motion to intervene. And the days passed for him to file an appeal or a motion for rehearing. So as far as I know, that issue is completed.
And suddenly she's concerned, of course, that there's something else coming and she wants to know if that's the case. And part of the discussion with the attorneys that they were hiring that night was, you know, the details of whether the attorney would keep them updated on ongoing litigation.
But if that issue is alive, then I would appreciate any updates. And I would hope that we would have a chance to resolve it amicably, because just for what it's worth, I have a very, very substantial bill from my attorneys that I cannot afford to pay. So if he were to sue and have attorney's fees that I would be expected to pay. I don't know when I would ever have the money to pay them.
And I believe that's true because she fought tooth and nail to keep from producing the records that I still wonder, why would anybody fight so hard to produce records that were, even the judge said, were public records? You know, what must be in them? I still to this day wonder because they have not been produced. But, you know, I understand that it costs a lot of money to defend, and she did everything she could to defend against having to produce those. And
so just for what it's worth, if there is a live issue with Mr. Steele concerning me, I would very much appreciate the chance to resolve it amicably because I do not have the funds to pay any attorney's fees, not even my own.
And one sort of asks, at least I'm asking, well, why didn't you just choose to resolve it amicably before spending all of the money, tens of thousands of dollars, I'm assuming, on not producing the records? If you can resolve it amicably, why didn't you do that when Alex Andrade asked you for the records? He says asked five times or more. I've seen some of those exchanges. It looks like a reasonable request to me. I don't know why. And then even after the lawsuit was filed, she could have ceased and desisted and provided, and it would have been all over, but fought for, you know, for a long time. So I have sympathy for having to have these big legal bills after she lost her job in the city of Pensacola over what I don't believe is anything related to this, but that I have sympathy for. But you could have solved all of this by just producing them. So I get where she's coming from. And then there's going to be a little break in time, and we'll give you a break in time. We'll come back to this at 7:10, but there's a little break in time. And then the follow-up to all this was, well, let's say interesting, as is often the case in the city of Milton. So this has been part one of the episode. And coming up next hour at 7:10 is part two of this week's episode. 6:21 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
There have been many changes of command in the U.S. Navy in many different places, but the 1954 change of command that marked Lieutenant Commander Hawkins turning over command of the Blue Angels to Lieutenant Commander Zeke Cormier in February of 1954 was something special. In the skies over NAS New Orleans, at an altitude of 800 feet and a speed of 600 miles per hour, Lieutenant Commander Hawkins led his men in diamond formation, with Lieutenant Commander Cormier slightly behind and below. On signal, Cormier, the new leader, pulled up from the rear and into a loop. The Diamond then started their loop and at 1,200 feet broke formation with each member doing a roll and continuing the loop. At the top of the loop, at about 6,000 feet, Hawkins rolled out and flew away. The three wingmen continued their loops, joined Cormier at the bottom in the Diamond formation, and passed over the flight line with their new leader. Hawkins came back alone at 800 feet for one final pass over the crowd as a Blue Angel, and the aerial change of command was complete. During the 10th anniversary year of 1956, the Blue Angels made their first appearance on foreign soil, or is that foreign airspace, in Toronto, Canada. This show was in addition to 44 other shows across the United States. By year's end, millions had seen the flight exhibition team in person on television programs such as Navy Log and Mickey Mouse Club Newsreel or the Cinerama production Cinerama Holiday. It was clear that the Blue Angels had fulfilled their mission to bring the Navy to the people. In the middle of the 1957-58 season, the Blue Angels transitioned from the F9-F8 Cougar to the supersonic afterburner-equipped F11A Tiger. Such a mid-season transition was a difficult process, considering that for a period of about 3 months, it was necessary for the pilots to devote all available time between air shows to familiarize themselves with their new jets while flying their old Cougars for each public performance. This required tremendous concentration because there was considerable difference in control pressures and sensitivity, trim changes, and power requirements between the two aircraft. But the transition was successful, and the Blue Angels completed their season in the new Tigers with the unanimous opinion that they looked better than ever. I'll be back with more after this.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
The Blue Angels would fly the F-11A Tigers for the next decade. That and more next time on News Radio's History of the Blue Angels.
Coming up on the 4th of July is the free Pensacola Fireworks presented by Pensacola Young Professionals and the Pensacola Chamber. At 7:30, be at Community Maritime Park for Pensacola Symphony's free Sparks and Stars concert, sponsored by Peter Mouget. You can also listen to the symphony broadcast live at 7:30 right here on News Radio 92.3. Continue listening at 9 as the fireworks will be synchronized to the music presented by Penn Air Credit Union. Bring your radio and enjoy the 4th of July.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Explore a wide range of local and fresh produce at the Saturday Farmers Market in Navarre from 10 till 2 at South 87 and Segura Corner. Summer Saturdays, live band performances continue with free shows from noon till 4 at The Garden at Perfect Plain on Garden Street. This week, check out the band Caviar Waves. Find more events and submit yours at newsradio923.com.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, Pep Talk, mornings at 9 right after Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Do you exercise?
Yes, love making and woodworking.
Do you have any history of mental illness in your family?
I have an uncle who does yoga.
Allergies?
Cowardice and weak-willed men. And hazelnuts.
And now young Scott with a slingshot finally found a tender spot and strolled his lover.
I have an uncle who does yoga. John Pickens has got traffic on the five. John?
That's right. Just working that one accident that happened, Sienemann Road and Avalon Boulevard. I'm seeing some minor delays on Avalon Boulevard northbound, but first responders are on their way there, and we'll get you more information on that. Other than that, we are rolling accident-free. I-10, I-110 are all looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, John. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, Andrew. Looks like the ceasefire between Israel and Iran is doing better today than it did yesterday. Each side claiming victory after the U.S.-backed cessation of hostilities, and President Trump's Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff, says talks between Washington and Tehran are now ongoing. The U.S. joined Israel in attacking Iran over the weekend.
Of course, targeting why the peace deal is holding.
Why is that?
Stern talking to.
You know what, we basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the f*** they're doing. Do you understand that?
Nothing like...
That's all you can...
Dad giving you a stern talking to. Go on.
You could really see the frustration on him when that clip was taken.
Yeah.
The National Highway Transit Safety Administration is looking into the deployment of Tesla's self-driving robo-taxis in Austin, Texas. Over the weekend, the service launched with influencers apparently using the service and posting videos of their trips. The videos have drawn the attention of the government, however, because some of the cars appeared to have difficulty following traffic laws. The cars were seen speeding and crossing double yellow lines.
And John wants to get in one.
What?
You're the one who's all in favor of the self-driving cars.
Oh, yeah, but yeah.
I think there's a lot of people who would pay extra if their robo-taxi would speed. Like, look, well, robo-taxi, get me to the airport right now.
They're just responding to consumer demand, right?
You'll get a bigger tip.
Speaking of EVs, David, thanks so much for the update. Speaking of EVs, two stories. One, did you see the cargo container that was headed to South America full of electric vehicles that they all caught on fire and now the ship sank?
No.
Oh, yeah. car carrier sank in the Pacific 3 weeks after the fire began. So it was going. This fire has been going for weeks. And finally, it just, you know, it was too much and the cargo ship went down. So, yeah, that's one. Just a note for the whatever. And then, you know how President Trump put in place this, like, repeal of the EV mandates and all this stuff? But you know who was buying EVs? The Postal Service. Remember the Postal Service is replacing all of their trucks?
Right.
And they had contracted to buy tens of thousands of electric vehicles. And now those are all in the process of basically being canceled. And, you know, they had put in electrical infrastructure for all the charging stations, and that's all being undone. And they're one of the worries. Well, it's one of these things that is in the reconciliation house in the Senate. and the parliamentarian in the Senate says that this is not something they can do through reconciliation, so it may not be able to be done without a majority of 60 to break the filibuster. We'll see. But it looks like this is where we're headed, is maybe canceling all of the brand new United States Postal Service trucks, which, by the way, are weird looking if you haven't seen them. They're super odd looking. But it kind of looks like somebody took a truck and then just grabbed the top and stretched it up 5 feet or a car. Anyway, they may have to wind up selling these on the secondary market, you know, to kind of get back some money if they can't use them.
Oh, I want one.
I was thinking this, like, on the one hand, some people would never want one. Other people are like, hey, GPV looks like a big minivan.
Fox News, I'm Gianna Gelosi. President Trump and NATO leaders meeting this morning in The Hague, saying the alliance needs to increase defense spending to 5%.
They're going up to 5%. That's a big, from 2%. And a lot of people didn't even pay the 2%. So I think that's going to be very big news. NATO is going to become very strong with us.
The president denying a U.S. intelligence report that says U.S. strikes on Iranian nuclear facilities only delayed the nuclear program by a few months.
He said, without maligning his own intelligence officials, that that leaked document did not paint an accurate picture. And moreover, he thinks the Iranians did not get much uranium out of there.
That is Fox's Jackie Heinrich. And former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has conceded the Democratic primary for mayor to 33-year-old Democratic Socialist Zohran Mamdani. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got partly cloudy skies. It is 79 degrees in Pensacola. Homeland Security arrested 37 people at a construction site for the new Gulf Shores High School yesterday. The operation involved collaboration with local law enforcement agencies, including police in Orange Beach and Gulf Shores, as well as the Baldwin County Sheriff's Office. Details about the charges or reasons for the arrests have not been officially released yet. The city of Gulf Breeze does say the construction site is under the complete control of a contractor. No city or school employees were present when federal officials made those arrests. Well, some more about that double shooting in Atmore yesterday. Officials say that happened after a large group of people were drag racing just outside of town on Carver Avenue near 18th. Officials say more than 50 gunshots were fired. Two victims have been identified so far. 18-year-old Gabriel Hooks, he passed away. He was a recent graduate from Escambia County High School and was on their football team as well last year. A female victim was flown to a trauma center with multiple gunshots. Atmore police are asking anybody with information to come forward. So far, there's no information on any possible suspects involved. FDLE is investigating last week's deputy-involved shooting at the Arby's on Highway 98. Officials say the deputies were attempting to arrest 38-year-old Daniel Lewis Hayes on the charges related to an alleged domestic incident where a woman was strangled and had a screwdriver held to her throat. When deputies arrived, they say Hayes ran into the restaurant, went behind the counter where he armed himself with a knife.
We're telling him to stop and to drop the knife, and he at one point he just turns kind of away from the deputies, just more or less to the side. And then he starts taking stuff out of his pockets, but he keeps the knife in his hand. And he takes what looks like a lanyard or something around his neck, tosses that to the ground, and again, keeps the knife in his hand. He sees the deputies that are there. He turns, and I'll term it as, again, to describe as best I can, an aggressive step towards the deputies.
And three deputies ended up shooting at Lewis. They're now on paid administrative leave as the FDLE investigates the incident. A man that raped and killed a woman in Orlando has been executed by the state. Thomas Guadinas was killed last night at Florida State Prison in Bradford County. The 51-year-old died by lethal injection. He'd been convicted of raping and killing Michelle McGrath in 1994. Guadinas' last visitor was his mother. Yesterday morning, the execution was the seventh in the state of Florida this year. Another is set for next month. Senator Rick Scott trying to close what he's calling a clear and dangerous loophole in the higher education system. Senator Scott introduced the American Students First Act yesterday, which proposes a cap on the number of foreign students that can attend U.S. universities on F and M visas. Scott is proposing the cap at 10% of the student body. Under current law, there is no limit. It's 6:34, News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 forecast.
We do have a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms throughout your day today, high near 95 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 77. Showers and thunderstorms will be moving in through the overnight period tonight, going into early Thursday morning. A few storms could be strong with the possibility of damaging winds and hail. Going into the rest of your Thursday, we will have conditions calming down, high near 92 by Thursday afternoon, and by Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 78. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now we've got partly cloudy skies. It is 79 degrees in Pensacola. Our next news at 7 and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, and dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Oil prices are up by nearly 1% after President Trump said the ceasefire between Israel and Iran appears to be holding. West Texas Intermediate sits at $64.97 per barrel. Brent currently sitting at $67.77 per barrel. A new Zillow study says Louisiana's housing market is in a slump for more than 2 years and is in for more tough times. The forecast projects that over the next 12 months, homeowners in six Louisiana cities will see steeper drops in the value of their homes than anywhere else in the country. These include New Orleans, Alexandria, Lafayette, and more. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said the agency is in a wait-and-see stance regarding interest rate cuts because of concerns regarding the impact of President Trump's tariffs. Powell will present his speech, along with the Fed's monetary policy report, to the Senate Banking Committee later today. Futures are currently mixed. Tuesday, the Dow Industrials gained 507, the NASDAQ up 281. That's Your Money Now.
And at 6:36, John Pickens with our traffic on the fives.
That's right. Brought to you by Executive Landscaping. Call them today for all your commercial and premium landscaping needs. Still dealing with that accident that happened on Cyanamid Road and Avalon Boulevard. I'm seeing some delays in the northbound on Avalon and also seeing delays if you're going eastbound on Cyanamid Road. So just be aware of that. First responders are on the scene. But just some minor delays there. Other than that, I-10, I-110, they're all flowing smoothly, not seeing any delays. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Next news in 30 minutes and breaking news anytime. News Radio 92.3.
Are you living with dry AMD? If so, you could be on the road to geographic atrophy, or GA, a condition that leads to retinal cell death and permanent vision loss. But with Izervay, you can
slow it down and get it going slower.
Izervay slows GA progression by targeting a key source of retinal cell death, which may help preserve your vision longer. Izervay, or Avastin Captate Pegol, is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com. Paid for by Astellas Pharma.
Good morning, guys. I just want to warn you, traffic is tough out there.
We are here for you to tell you how to keep safe.
Everybody who is listening needs to take cover as soon as they can.
To provide the music, talk, and sports you love. And to deliver the news that matters to you. We are the voices you can trust. We are live and local. We are America's broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and tell Congress you depend on your local radio stations.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Northwest Florida businesses pay an average 20% more for phone service. Data Revolution wants to change that. We are your local, service-focused VoIP provider. Right now, offering a free bill review and free installation for new customers. No matter where your team is, Data Revolution can help. Experience the service and support only a locally owned company can provide. Join the revolution at datarevs.com.
Hobbies can be fun and expensive. How about a hobby that's fun and could make you money? Find out tomorrow morning at 10 with Emerald Coast Coins. Hear about precious metals and metal detectors as a great hobby. For nearly 20 years, Emerald Coast Coins has been one of the top-rated businesses in Northwest Florida to buy and sell gold, silver, and the best metal detectors to find treasure. Get more information about this tomorrow morning on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Are you looking for the best news in talk radio in Pensacola? Then tune in to News Radio Pensacola. We're your source for the latest news, weather, and traffic, as well as in-depth interviews with local and national leaders. We also have the best talk radio lineup in town, with hosts that are passionate about the issues that matter to you. So whether you're looking to stay informed or just want to hear some great conversation, News Radio Pensacola is the place for you. News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
Good stuff right there. 641 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, and that music can only mean one thing. It means that we're going to be talking trash with Bruce Woody, the Executive Director of the Emerald Coast Utilities Authority, ECUA. Bruce, welcome back to the show, sir.
Yeah, good morning, Andrew. Good to talk to you.
Good morning. Or I suppose in this case, more so not talking trash but water, but we got all of it involved. First of all, we had talked about it when it happened, but there has been a milestone reached since the last time you and I talked, right?
That is true. Due to the state passing Senate Bill 700, all public and private utilities that provide water service throughout the state are no longer allowed to fluoridate or put fluoride in the water. So we needed to complete that task by July 1st. At their meeting in May, our board chose to cease purchase of additional materials and just use up what was already on hand. As a result of that, the last of the fluoridation in ECUA's water was Monday, June 16th.
There you go. So we're all done with fluoridating the water until and unless something changes at the state, because it's completely preempted out of our local control. And this means we won't have an amendment to vote on. We won't have any more conversation about it and get a visit from Joe Latipo. Just it's all done. So I was kind of surprised in listening to the conversation between the board members. You and I had talked about this a little bit last time. I was just surprised that there was still a fair amount of emotion and contention even over the question of how to end the policy and are we perceived as standing against the state and that kind of stuff. It was kind of interesting. I haven't talked about it on the show, but it's just kind of an interesting thing. But part of that was an effort to make people aware that if fluoride is not in the water anymore, where they can go if they want to get fluoride products in order to maintain that usefulness as a dental treatment, right?
Yeah. So there were motions from our own customers on both sides of that debate. So to help provide some additional information, if you are still interested in fluoride and resources regarding that material, you can go to ECUA's website under the Live Green tab. There's another tab called Our Water Supply. And there you can find out some information, a little bit about the history of the Senate bill, for starters. Also, some additional sources for fluoride if you want to pursue that separately and individually. There's also a few links to some public services that provide information about fluoride coming from the ADA, CDC, National Institutes of Health, Florida Department of Health, et cetera.
And some other stuff that's going on that you guys dealt with yesterday. You've got five new trucks that you've purchased, right? And this is really kind of a good news story because they're cheaper than what we'd previously been paying.
That's true. We keep a close tabs on what it costs to own and operate all of our equipment. And as we monitor the life cycle cost of a piece of equipment and the changes in technology, it's become evident the last few years that it is less expensive to operate diesel now as opposed to compressed natural gas. We still have a large fleet of CNG vehicles, including some we've purchased new in the last few years, but it's now to the point where the first cost to purchase the vehicle is less for diesel than CNG. The cost to operate and maintain it in terms of preventive maintenance is less for diesel than CNG. And then lastly, at the end of the service life, when we're selling the old vehicles, we can actually get a salvage value out of the diesels, whereas nobody was buying CNG other than paying scrap metal prices for it.
Wow.
So now making the switch to diesel, that first cost you just mentioned, though, a full $100,000 per vehicle less expensive upfront.
Wow, $100,000 less per. So we just by just switching to diesel from CNG, we've saved $500,000 in this latest order. And what was the price before per truck?
They were about $490,000 a piece for a full size vehicle.
That's the previous. So these ones are like $390. They're just under $400 a piece.
Yep. That's
wow.
Correct.
Okay. Well, that's great. Cause for celebration. We're talking to Bruce Woody. He is executive director of VCUA. Bruce, hang on for just a second. Traffic on the Fives with John Pickens. John?
That's right. Just that one accident that we're dealing with right now on Avalon Boulevard and Sinamid Road, both the northbound and southbound lanes are slowing down. I'm starting to see some minor delays associated with this. Again, that's Avalon Boulevard at Sinamid Road. They had an accident there earlier. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the Five.
Thanks so much, John. Back to Bruce Woody, the executive director of the Emerald Coast Utilities Authority, ECUA. You guys, yesterday, your board signed the agreement for the interlocal with the city of Pensacola to resume use of the MRF, the materials recycling facility, for recycling in the city. Is that right?
Yes, that's true. We're really excited that the city of Pensacola is getting back into the recycling business. They're just now sharing information with the media and the general public. So the timeline, of course, is certainly their own. They're discussing what rates would be. This would be by subscription rather than as a part of so it's a voluntary service at an additional fee. City of Pensacola is going to do their own collecting, but our contract is then to provide the recycling services at our materials recovery facility. So we'll process the recyclables, and we have entered into a revenue-sharing agreement with the city.
You know, two questions for you, Bruce. One is, this is kind of your domain. You know about this stuff, and I know the pitch from Mayor Reeves has been for quite some time, and the deal they have is actually a very interesting one because it's private money that is going to be paying for the education campaign to get people to recycle more effectively and to not have their recyclables mixed with trash and all of that, you know, contaminants or whatever. But based on your survey of the field, do you think that it's more successful if there's opt-in recycling as opposed to everybody recycling in terms of the contamination rate?
Since there is a financial incentive for participants to be involved in recycling, there's a night and day difference. We have some customers coming, for instance, from Santa Rosa County. We have subscription services, and pretty consistently, their contamination rates are really low, like 15%. And usually those items aren't garbage. They're just items that people hope or think would be recyclable that technically aren't.
They put styrofoam in it, and you guys don't take styrofoam, for instance, that kind of thing.
Right.
Okay.
Perfect. Yeah, examples like that. Whereas our challenges in our community, since it's strictly voluntary, those folks, we have a certain segment of our service area that for whatever reason just don't have an interest in recycling, and therefore use the recycling bin as just another garbage can.
So
when that gets all co-mingled, we wind up with contamination rates pushing close to 50%.
Oh, I know. Okay, so that's like you say, night and day. 15 versus 50 is an amazing number, and it's not even trash. It's just non-allowed materials, basically. Okay, so if that's true, has ECUA ever talked about going to a subscription service for recycling to cut down on that problem?
We do internally at the staff level quite a bit. We've only had it come up lightly discussed at the board level.
Okay.
There's a lot of perspectives on that. We want as much participation as we can, certainly, and we started as voluntary. And we want to encourage recycling. You know, the volume of recycling goes down, although the quality goes up.
Right.
There's an inverse relationship there. So But at present, it's strictly voluntary in our service area.
Okay, well, I mean, I as just a layman and as a customer, it seems like that would be a conversation, you know, worth having in some detail, mm-hmm. because the, you know, the cost savings to ECUA, which it's all one big, you know, bundle of money in the end, but the cost savings to ECUA of not having to waste money on contaminated loads and being able to therefore be more profitable to offset the cost of, you know, garbage collection and everything. I don't know, just, you know, these numbers a lot better than I do, but oh. the 15 versus 50 is a pretty stark number. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people in Escambia County would be willing to pay a little bit if we could make it more efficient and maybe it saves us money. I don't know, but you tell me, you know, you're the expert.
Yeah, I will say 2 years ago, we did take kind of an interim step in that it used to be when you subscribed to us, you received one trash can and one recycling can. And if you didn't want to recycle, then you didn't get the recycling can. You know, that was one can unless you paid extra for the second can. That was changed about 2 years ago. Now, for the fee you pay, you receive two cans. And that second can is a customer's option, whether they want it to be a recycling can or a trash can. So we've provided a means for folks to opt out of the recycling program, and it has helped somewhat. I've looked at the numbers really recently, but you know, it might be 45% or something as opposed to 50.
It's still small difference, yeah.
A little bit, but we are making changes with folks who do just genuinely do have no interest in recycling. Leaving them an option.
Okay. Well, I'm sure it makes you pull your hair out to think about, but you know, it's the first time I had thought about it that way. I know I'm new to the conversation on that, but I was just curious. The other question I wanted to ask you about recycling is it Okaloosa? Where was there's a new facility that's opened up to our east. I can't remember if it's Okaloosa or Walton. And there was some concern that maybe they would compete against us for customers, especially out of Santa Rosa County and other surrounding areas. Have you seen that? Has there been shifting in the market from the, you know, input side of your recycling operation because of the competition?
Out of our prior customer base, the only change that's happened has been Okaloosa County themselves.
Okay.
Right off the bat, they did sign up with Waste Management, who opened a facility in Okaloosa County. But Santa Rosa County, who had briefly toyed with the idea of going out for RSP, have instead re-upped with us. They're continuing to provide services here. We competed through responding to a request for proposals for the City of Pensacola services. And Waste Management also submitted proposals, but the city chose ECUA.
Got it. Okay. And then the last thing, we're talking to Bruce Woody with Emerald Coast Utilities Authority. You guys have a career fair, so if people want a job or know somebody who wants a job, it's tomorrow, is that right?
Yes, Thursday the 26th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at our facility at 3050 Godwin Lane. That's just east of Pine Forest. We're having a career fair. We have a number of open positions for sanitation equipment operator and fleet mechanic. And we're also looking for additional parts position in our parts department. And if those positions sound interesting to you, please come and visit us. We have a decent starting wage and lots of opportunities for incentives to increase that wage through things like safety incentives or additional SAE certifications, et cetera. And good benefits. And only 15% of employers out there offer pensions. And we're an organization that's part of the Florida retirement system. So there's some benefits you can't get elsewhere. So it's a good opportunity for folks.
A pension? What's that? No, that's amazing. That's fantastic.
Right.
Oh, and by the way, that you made me think of something. The Godwin Lane, is that the location for the transfer station, the one that's supposed to really cut down on the trip time and kind of, especially during rush hour, and really improve the operational efficiency? Is that where are we at on that transfer station construction? You haven't broke ground yet, right?
No, there's multi-step processes are for any commercial development. We've got the plans all complete except for some recent minerals we're having to do on the stormwater drainage side, getting our proposed detention basin pond approved, and then FDOT's still looking at some driveway entrance details.
But, okay.
Then we'll be going back to the county for their final review, and we have a review process to finish with FDEP. Then we'll be ready for bid, so look forward to getting into construction.
So we're probably, what, a year and a half, 2 years away from completion?
Once we get all the permits, then we'll have about a year and a half of construction.
So, okay, so even longer.
I'd say there's easily six months on top of that by the time we go to bids.
So. Okay, all right. Well, I know that's a big passion project for Vicki Campbell, and you know, I think it's a great project, so I'm eager to see that happen because I know it's going to make your lives better, make our lives better as well, and take your trucks off the road running up back and forth between the landfill. Bruce Woody, ECUA executive. I'm sorry, what's that?
A lot of efficiencies to be gained by that. Yes, we're looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Bruce Woody, he is the executive director of ECUA. Bruce, as always, thanks for the time telling us what our elected officials are doing on our behalf when it comes to recycling and water and, you know, all the things that they take care of. I appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again next month.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to share information. Have a good day.
Always, always. All right, 6:55 here on News Radio 92.3. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Well, the earlier accident we had on Avalon Boulevard and Sienemid Road is completely clear now. I see traffic's flowing again. Seeing some minor delays on I-10 eastbound right around the mile Highway 29 exit there. Just minor delays. I-10 eastbound again right around the Highway 29 exit. Other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Hey, if you're thinking about picking up another home because you want to have a second home on the beach or because you want to have a rental, whether it's a vacation rental or a long-term, and you're wondering, hey, is now the good time to invest in a rental property? Well, I don't know. I mean, ask Christina Leavenworth. This is literally her business to know whether people are motivated to sell right now, whether the level of the rates that they can get, if they, you know, whether you can get a good enough rate to make it competitive versus the rate that they've already got in their mortgage right now that they're running on. You know, those are good questions. Is the rental market squishy? Is it good? Is it bad? What are happening to price? I mean, these are, ask her. Ask her. I don't know. This is her domain, not my domain. And she and her folks at Leavenworth Realty, they sell a lot of homes, three, three and a half, four every single week, whether it's rentals or live-ins or seconds or upsizing or downsizing or whatever the case may be. She can help you with that. Or any other question. Who knows? You might have all, I never know all the questions you might have about real estate. Give her a call and ask her. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty.
Join the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10:30, as Bess Marks from Lazy Boy joins the show, talking about upcoming events at all three Gulf Coast locations, Pensacola, Spanish Fort, and Mobile, how to incorporate Lazy Boy's free in-home design service with recliners, sofas, accessories, and artwork to make your home look just like a picture out of a magazine.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions, 850-437-1620.
Delicious seafood is what you'll find at Davis Catfish House. Davis Catfish serves only the best Mississippi catfish, fresh Gulf seafood, and delicious homemade sides. Weekday specials include two times Tuesday, six free shrimp added to the six-piece dinner. Wednesdays offer lunch basket specials. And everybody's favorite, Shrimp-tastic Thursday, $5 off all-you-can-eat shrimp. Serving fresh seafood daily, visit Davis Catfish House on Dogwood Drive in Milton. See you at David's.
Have you given your auto loan a second thought lately? Just like you might refinance a home for a better deal, you can do the same with your auto loan. Refinance an existing loan from another institution with Pinnair Credit Union and lower your interest rate by up to 2%. Plus, you can skip payments for the first 90 days. Take your old auto loan off of autopilot with Pinnair to lower your interest and payments. Learn more at Pinnair.org/auto-refi. That's Pinnair.org/auto-refi. All loans are subject to approval. Offer valid on loan application submitted between April 1st and June 30th, 2025 only. Call toll-free 1-877-4-PIN-AIR for complete details.
When a storm is brewing, you need reliable information at your fingertips. Tune in to News Radio 92.3 for comprehensive hurricane coverage you can count on. Our team of anchors and reporters are in studio and at the county emergency operations centers, bringing you live updates, safety tips, and emergency resources. From storm tracking to storm information, we've got you covered. Stay informed, stay safe. When the winds pick up, we're right there with you. News Radio 92.3, your trusted source during hurricane season.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings 5 till 9 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Could I have a hug?
No.
Give me a hug.
No way.
Come here.
I'm not coming over there.
Let's go.
Forget it.
Pronto.
Break it on down.
Woo!
Bless you.
Woo!
Bless you.
Woo!
Oh, bless you.
Good morning, 6:58 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. David Wayne is in the newsroom with a headline or two for us. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. President Trump will be at the NATO summit in the Netherlands today. They'll be discussing the U.S. airstrikes on Iran. Also, the recent pledge by NATO countries to increase their defense spending to 5% of their gross domestic product. And a heat wave continuing across the nation today. Hot summer temperatures up to 20 degrees above normal being forecast all the way from Texas to Maine today. Several record temps have been set all across the country.
But is it a heat dome or is it a heat funnel or is it,
we haven't come up with the scary
a heat
name.
Bowl or is it a heat shuffle? Is it a burn alley? What is the name we're going with?
Stream us at newsradio923.com. Newsradio 92.3.